This is an On the Media Podcast Extra. I'm Bob Garfield. This week's show, which we called Kidnapped, featured an interview with Deborah and Mark Tice, the parents of Austin Tice, the freelance American journalist who disappeared in Syria nearly 4 years ago. We received many comments from people who were deeply moved by that conversation, so we thought we'd offer you a longer version. At age 30, Austin Tice went to Syria with pure intentions to report firsthand what befell the people there. He had little experience, but a lot of verve and a lot of nerve, venturing deeper into the country than nearly any other Western journalist. Within a month, he was filing stories for McClatchy and the Washington Post, appearing on CBS, and giving interviews to public radio.
From what I've seen, when the rebels fight, the civilians come out in the streets and leave them, you know, platters of food and pitchers of water to support them when they're fighting.
Then in August 2012, he vanished. Six nightmarish weeks later, his family saw evidence of life, a video showing him being led blindfolded up a hillside by armed, masked men.
Oh, Jesus.
Since that video, the Tices have had no communications with Austin or his captors, but they have had what they call credible recent reports that Austin is still alive, and further, that he isn't held either by ISIS or Syrian rebel troops. The Syrian regime denies any responsibility, but its network of militias have the means and the histories to be suspect. For its part, the U.S. government has told the Tices to be patient. But sitting quietly never made sense to them. In the years since his disappearance, they have worked tirelessly to draw attention to their son's plight.
If your child goes missing in the mall, you don't go and whisper in a security guard's ear, "I kind of think my child might be missing, but don't tell anyone." The natural response is to start hollering your child's name, asking everyone in the mall if they've seen them, raising a ruckus. And so this whole idea of silence is so counterintuitive that you begin to wonder what the real motive is behind it.
You're trying to put a flyer on every telephone pole in the world. Can you describe for me the breadth and the scope of the Free Austin Tice campaign?
Oh, my gosh. It's broad and deep, and we have to give tremendous credit, among others, to Reporters Without Borders. They were able to put banners on the websites of over 200 media organizations, you know, everything from the Washington Post and the New York Times to USA Today and on and on and on. Full-page ads in the Washington Post and in the New York Times. Another part of the campaign involved putting some billboards up around Houston because, you know, one of the things that we found is even if you really, really want to get the word out and to make everyone aware and to try to garner the support, you know, of your friends, your family, your fellow citizens, it's incredibly difficult to reach even the people in your own city.
You've had neighbors surprised to discover, you know, only recently that Austin is in custody somewhere, right?
It always just floors us. You know, even now we'll get the question, well, are you guys going to go public? And it's interesting, Bob, because, you know, now you can get so much news through Twitter. And I would look at my Twitter feed and I would think, why is this person going on every single news channel with nothing new to say, says the same thing over and over again. And now I realize that there is a method in the madness. And the thing is that many people are loyal to only one channel. So it's okay to say the same thing over and over again to every different channel to hope that someone's walking through the room in that 20 seconds that you're going to be giving your message.
You got to flood the zone, as they say.
Right. If we were doing one interview or two interviews, which for us was just such an emotional investment, we didn't realize the prudence of doing many and over again in order to just saturate the audience.
May I just observe that there is this cruel irony that having made the decision in kind of in defiance of what had been conventional wisdom for a couple of decades in dealing with these situations, you go public in the biggest way you possibly can, only to discover that it is very hard to maintain the attention of the American public. Can you tell me about the White House rally, please?
Oh, the White House rally. The department chair of the journalism department at Georgetown University really pushed her students to do that. And, you know, it was well publicized, but the attendance was small. It was small. It was great to see it, and it was a wonderful thing for them to do. But compared to what we see in some other countries, I mean, in Lebanon, when someone goes missing, they burn tires on the highway. In 2015, I was in Paris for World Press Freedom Day as a guest of Reporters Without Borders, and I gave a speech, and there were thousands of people there to show support for press freedom. When one of their citizens is missing, they throw banners on their tallest buildings and say, "We will not stand for our people being taken and held against their will unjustly, and we will bring them home." I'm not really sure, Bob, why we can't get that kind of groundswell in America.
Is it hostage fatigue?
I think it's really about what are people invested in? What are they passionate about? And, you know, how the modern news cycle, you know, is constantly changing. You can't keep your message on top for long. And so it's difficult to grab people's attention.
You've even been at pains to persuade journalists to continue to write about it because the news by nature concerns what's new. And journalists are looking at you like, well, what have you got to add to the story so far? What's the pitch?
That is a button. And it's one of my most protruding buttons that you can just bump into in the hallway. What's new? Well, the sun rose on another day of captivity for my son. And every time the sun rises, that's new. And we count those days, and they matter. And the idea of having to have some new angle or some new pitch to try to sell this story of your colleague taken hostage for doing your job that you share is just beyond imaginable.
There's also, I suppose, the American complacency about the meaning of a free press because it's really not an issue that has existential meaning to us. We don't really face the life and death stakes that foreign correspondents have to deal with and domestic journalists in dozens of countries, especially war-torn ones abroad. I imagine you have probably had to sit there and listen while people described Austin as foolhardy and laying down with dogs and waking up with fleas. Have you encountered that sentiment, and what in the world do you do when you face it?
Yeah, well, the first advice that we received and are happy to pass out is don't read the comments. It's not something that we hear often, but we have heard it. We've been fortunate enough to have the opportunity to speak to more than one group of student journalists or aspiring journalists. And I don't hesitate at all to tell them or to say now that journalism is an honorable profession. It's so important and critical whether we consciously recognize it or not. And in fact, one of the themes of the Free Austin Tice campaign is the blindfold. And the idea is not just that Austin was blindfolded, you know, in the video you referenced, but that when journalists are taken, when they're missing, when they're suppressed, it puts a blindfold on all of us because we can't get the information that we need to have, especially in a democracy, to make decisions, to tell our representatives what we believe they should and should not support. I mean, that information comes from the media. It comes from journalists. And I have to say, I know personally, I didn't feel passionate about journalism before this experience, but we've learned a lot. And my understanding of how important it is has changed tremendously.
There was a very sympathetic piece about Austin and you in Texas Monthly, a very strong piece describing his extraordinarily intrepid reporting and the passion that he brings to journalism. But at the end of it, there was this oddly cold description of you as having become, I think it said, a full-time hostage family. And I wonder what percentage of that is the realistic notion that you can help secure Austin's release, and what percentage of it is just a coping mechanism, becoming an activist in lieu of being able actually to alter the outcome?
There's no doubt that Deborah and I both feel strongest when we're taking action, you know, when we're doing something that we believe has a chance of hastening Austin's safe return. On the other hand, we found out very early, and this is an old cliche, you know, don't worry, the government's here. They're going to help you. They're going to solve everything. That just wasn't the case. So, you know, because of that experience, we not only felt like we had to figure out what we could do and do everything we could, but that it was actually necessary. There wasn't a silver bullet. There wasn't someone that had all the answers. So it's still true that very much of what we do every day is about reaching out, following up, finding ways that we can, in fact, try to influence Austin's return.
And what happens every time the phone rings?
Well, we don't jump anymore, but we do answer it every time it rings in the middle of the night. And the last thing that both of us do before we hit the pillow is check all of our Google alerts, our Twitter feeds, search the internet for anything new or a new opportunity. Deborah does way too much of that in the middle of the night.
It's not the middle of the night on the other side of the world.
There you go.
We are a hostage family. Austin has 6 siblings. And even though his youngest brother is 22, they have sorely missed their parents these last 3 years and 9 months. And they have bonded together in an incredible way to fill the gap that Mark and especially me, the only job that I've ever had is to be the mom. They have really held it together for each other through college graduations and weddings, all kinds of big life events where it would have been so different if I had been fully present. They've done a remarkable job of being compassionate toward Mark and I and understanding how this takes ascendancy. And I do think they're quite tired of it.
Tell me, please, about whether resignation has ever begun to creep in and at what point you are prepared to stand down.
We're always frustrated that something more isn't happening, that he's not on his way right now. But that is a long way from resignation. The only thing we're resigned to is his safe return and are confident that it's going to happen. There's nothing in our lives that isn't shaded in some way by what's going on with Austin. That said, that's even more reason for us to not slow down, to try to continue to redouble our efforts to get him home and to end this ordeal for everyone, all of our loved ones and friends.
Early on in his expedition to Turkey and then Syria, Austin wrote a Facebook post that was kind of a manifesto or at least an explanation to people who asked him, what in the world are you up to? and, you know, just keep yourself safe. And his answer is extraordinary. And I'm just going to read a portion of it. Our granddads stormed Normandy and Iwo Jima and defeated global fascism. Neil Armstrong flew to the moon in a glorified trash can, doing math on a clipboard as he went. Before there were roads, the pioneers put one foot in front of the other until they walked across the entire continent. Then a bunch of them went down to fight and die in Texas because they thought it was the right thing to do. Sometime between when our granddads licked the Nazis and when we started putting warnings on our coffee cups about the temperature of our beverage, America lost that pioneering spirit. We became a fat, weak, complacent, coddled, unambitious, and cowardly nation. So that's why I came here to Syria, and it's why I like being here now, right in the middle of a brutal and still uncertain civil war. This is beyond intrepid. This is a manifesto about a life with purpose.
That's just how our kids were raised. Your purpose in life is to find your passion because that's your call, and to go at it with all your heart, and to trust that you will be where you are meant to be when you are meant to be there. And, you know, it's that fearless sense of calling that fills our history books with heroes.
Debbie and Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for inviting us to join you.
Thank you, Bob.
Deborah and Mark Tice are the parents of Austin Tice, the freelance American journalist who disappeared in Syria in August 2012. This has been an On the Media Podcast Extra. I'm Bob Garfield.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.